Well, hello everyone. Today I want to talk about quite a difficult issue in political theory, and political practice indeed, and that is the question of gatekeeping. How is it done? How does the regime police the boundaries of the left-right political divide, working both to harness the energy built up either on the left or on the right, so it kind of leeches off it like a vampire, as I've talked about before, but then, ultimately, when push comes to shove, works to gatekeep out anyone who is actually on the left or actually on the right. And actually, there are two pretty interesting characters on the political scene, both of whom I've talked to, who made videos about this very recently. One is my guest from last week, Infrared Has, who's literally a communist, to quote Ash Sarkar, okay, and one of the leaders of communism in America. The other is Connor Tomlinson, who is a figure associated with right-wing politics here in the UK. And I've talked to Connor as well. I've been on his show. I've met him in real life, which means I'm quite a uniquely placed person to speak to both of these things. I did double check to see if I'm the first person in the world to have spoken to both of these people, both Connor Tomlinson and Has. That is not the case. Tim Pool has had them both on as guests, I believe. So I'm not the only person in the world who's spoken to both of these people. But I am one of the few people who understands where they are both coming from within their respective ideological, political frameworks. And what struck me, watching both Has and Connor's frustrations with the political system, is how, their flavour, in Has's case of left-wing politics, in Connor's case of right-wing politics, is kept out, policed out of the system, even though it proves popular with young people, even though, the basic ideas are popular with people. The system kind of harnesses the energy, the intellectual energy built up, the strength of feeling built up, and then cuts off the actual people and gatekeeps them out. One of the things that I find particularly interesting about it is the symbiotic or dialectical relationship between the two parties, and how each party, so in America, the Democrats use right-wing energy, Republican populist energy, to gatekeep the left, according to Has, and obviously on the right wing, they use critiques and attacks coming from the left in order to gatekeep the right, which is what Connor Tomlinson talks about, and I find the parallel absolutely fascinating. If you want to know more about containment, I have my book, Applied Elite Theory. I think there's a whole section, a long section on containment in there. Big chapter on containment, but also practically the whole book really is book length treatise on how political containment works and how the iron law of oligarchy is incredibly difficult to break from people committed to political change. So pick up a course at the academic agency if you're wondering, by the way. It's a Partagas. I think it's a Super Partagas, or it could be a Partagas Mille Fleurs. I think it's a Mille Fleurs, actually. And what I'm going to do here, I'm going to play a clip from Has. I'm going to play a tip from Connor. Maybe Connor first, then Has. You'll see how similar their experiences have been. And then I'll come back and offer some thoughts at the end. So take it away, Connor.
Instead, they would like to contain, limit, gatekeep and censor the conversation, and slow where it needs to go. Even though Nigel Farage said he's not a populist, he's an unpopulist, he does want to be liked. He does want to be approved of. And if the only basis for his public opinion is based on how Sky, the BBC, ITV treat him, then he will drift leftward over time out of risk aversion. You have to create a different power base to give him feedback, which means social media. So when I was on my stream last time, what was that, Thursday? While I was live, I got a phone call from one of the people organising this. And I couldn't take the call, but I called him back the next day. And I was told I'd been banned by Reform HQ because I'm not on the approved speakers list. Now, I know for a fact that some people have already bought tickets to the event because they wanted to participate in this. Hear me speak, say unorthodox things. And I don't know the reason why I'm not on the approved speakers list. I asked around because I still talked to some senior people in Reform and received no answer. Someone that is senior in the Reform, who objected to this cancellation, gave me a call and said and advised that I say nothing, I take it on the chin, because they wanted me to be involved in frontline politics within the next 5 to 10 years. And they said, just out of experience, you have to, quote, eat a lot of shit in order to sit at the main table. And I just said, look, I appreciate that incremental approach. I admire the emulation of a leftist long march for the institutions. It worked for them. But just as you might get things done from working from the inside, if they have no external feedback, if there is no cost to ritualistically denouncing, deplatforming, ostracizing people that your enemies disapprove of, out of a risk aversion of being called far-right and racist and whatever, when, in fact, I mean, I get accused of being a squishy moderate by many people. And I think I'm a reasonable chap who accurately represents what the majority of people think, even if they're competent towards. If you just allow them to have their only external feedback be, well, you're a fascist if you platform this person, then they're going to salami slice off their support base, their vocal supporters in media.
This is kind of what I want to address. I'm not interested in like ideological stuff. I'm not interested in gibbering or terminology, just straight realism. Why is that impossible? Well, you have to understand politics as a balance of different social forces and the ways in which different political leaders can employ those forces as leverage. At least in this case, in the game of electoral politics. So politics is really about the balance of leverage and social pressure. That's all it is. It's a balance of leverage and it's a balance of social pressure. Well, the Democratic Party is a machine that runs on donations from very big donors who have a lot of money. And the Democratic Party really does represent the interests of entrenched financial and business and corporate interests. I mean, they absolutely do. So it was just it was ideological damage that was taken. You know, their ideology HP suffered a little bit from the Bernie camp. Not much else. The real leverage that the Democratic Party employs, that they still employ, which they employed originally, and which is always the only meaningful leverage that they have, is the Republican Party. Okay, so that's what I want you to focus on. I want you to think of three, for now, just think of three different actors in U.S. politics. The Democrats, the Republicans, and the left. Okay, the left is sandwiched in the middle, strategically. Because the left will fight the Democratic Party mainstream. But the left is the underdog. Okay, so the Democratic Party mainstream already has it. They already have solid lines drawn on the maps. They already have a solid electorate. They already have a solid machine going. They already have a convention. They already have the donors, the money, the resources. And it's the burden is on the left to change that or to take that from the Democrats, right? So the order of leverage, the balance of leverage, I should rather say, is such that the Democrats can actually kind of team up with the Republicans or the right wing indirectly to corner the left. If Democrats employ right-wing rhetoric that would be typical of a Republican against the left, they can actually get away with it. Because while the left can scream and pout, you know, hey, you sound like a Republican, you sound like a Republican, all the Democrats have to say is basically like, well, fuck you, you know, because I'm the only alternative to the Republicans right now. You need me to defeat the Republicans. The left needs the Democratic Party to defeat the Republican Party. That's the order of leverage. So Democratic establishment and the Democratic mainstream can always indirectly channel the already existing prejudices of the Republican Party and the Republican Party base to silence the left and keep them in check. Hey, if you either choose us or the Republicans. Now the left can say, no, you sound like a Republican, you sound right wing. And the Democrats can say, maybe I do, bitch, maybe I do. But it's either me or it's them.
So what you see is the center of the system ensuring that nothing that actually threatens it is allowed into the parameters of the official discourse, the official conversation. You know, in Connor's case, he's been literally blacklisted from speaking for reform. In the case of Haz, who was talking about Mamdani, he notes how actual socialists, actual communists are kept out of the neoliberal Democratic Party in America, whose ultimate goal really is to keep things going from the regime's point of view, and they harness the Republicans in order to gatekeep to the left of the Bernie Bros or even the Bernie Bros themselves. It's what's really interesting is that from Haz's perspective, Mamdani is not the real deal. Mamdani is a fell for it again award, as was Barack Obama, as was Bernie Sanders. These were all fake leftists. Kamala Harris, fake leftists, according to Haz. None of them were actually anything other than stooges for the neoliberal center. And if you think about Connor's basic problem with Nigel, with reform, they are also essentially defenders of the neoliberal status quo. Ultimately, they're working to contain anything that truly threatens the hegemonic neoliberal, in Britain's case, Blairite centre. Also interesting is how both of them, both Haz and Connor, come to the conclusion that really the only way to win in this system is to some extent not to play. Not to play their game. Not to play the game of allowing yourself to be put in the situation where one of these gatekeepers has decisions to make over your future or whatever, and rather to agitate, to harness energy, you know, and to agitate from the sidelines. That is where both of them ultimately land. Arguably, Haz is a bit more radical than Connor, coming from kind of communist left. But Connor is kind of, you know, he cites Nick Fuentes as an example of someone who was basically deplatformed, banned from everything, and yet now he seems to be driving the conversation. Interesting, to say the least. Whether that actually works or not remains to be seen. I don't actually believe that the strategy of pushing the discourse from the margins realistically works. What it really does, it gives intellectual grist to the mill of that neoliberal centre, who will feed off the ideas, they will feed off the energy that you build up, but then of course it will contain them, it will, you know, shave off the edges. I mean, that's basically the process that's been happening to the right in Britain and America really since Trump, and it's also the process that happens time and again to the left. So in the end, the system ends up reproducing itself over and over and over again. You can put slightly different flavours on it. You can resell Reaganism with a MAGA hat, for example. You can resell Obama under the guise of Mamdani, there are many different ways that the system can kind of present itself as being more radical than it really is. And it's extraordinary, if you think about it, how successfully this works and how repeatedly it works. We're only 5 years removed from the tremendous betrayals of Boris Johnson in Britain, and yet the entire British right are set to fall for it again, because this time we got Nigel. It really is hopeless. You know, over on the left, Haz feels like he's in Groundhog Day too, because over and over and over again, people fall for the same trick. What's the trick? Oh, if you're right on the left, it's, oh, well, if you don't do this, you're going to let the fascists in. We got to fight fascism. The only way to do it is by attaining power. And the only route to power is by using the machinery of the Democrat Party. And then in this country, you know, on the other side, it's like, well, you know, you'll let the communist, if you don't back the Republicans, the world is going to be over. The sky's going to fall in. The communist jihadis are going to come to power. It's over. It's over for New York. Therefore, get back on the reservation. What that means is that the actual structures of power, the oligarchs, the massive donors who fund both parties, you know who many of them are at this point, the foreign policy establishment, nothing ever actually gets challenged. You know, in this country, they talk about the blob and the civil service and so on. Nobody ever actually takes it on. Nobody does. In America, they brought in Elon Musk to do Doge, right? To take a chainsaw to it all. And what did it result in? All of those funds were reallocated. Many, 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 many government employees got their jobs back. So in the end, it was just slop. In the end, it was just another fugazi. Just more froth on the top of your coffee. I also want to focus on something that people don't often talk about. Connor mentions that it's important to build your own institutions. And he's one of these people who's a joiner. He loves joining things. Me, I'm an academic. I never join anything. Not clubbable, as they say. Never will join anything. You know, that's just what I'm like. But for people who are really interested in, you know, starting organizations, building institutions, I have drawn here a kind of mock-up of what a small, let's call this a think tank, right? Let's just pretend this is a think tank. So in this organization, you've got a director there. You've got two little sub-bosses. So you've got the head honcho, two sub-bosses, and then you've got minions, okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 minions. So there are 5 minions, 2 sub-bosses, sub-directors, 1 director. And then this dollar sign is a source of funding. And ultimately, you've got a donor here, okay? Some billionaire. Now, if you have a look at this structure, and you were from the outside looking in, you're looking to infiltrate that structure, okay? Let's pretend, for example, that this is a conservative think tank that has strayed off the reservation of paying a deference to Israel, as one example. And you, as a Zionist, like, you know, Mark Levin or Ben Shapiro or something, want to put pressure on this to become, you know, to come back onto the reservation. There are many different ways you can go about attacking it, okay? For a start, you could try to get your people in there, okay? Let's just colour them in black, okay? So let's just pretend you get one of your guys in there. Okay, something like this happened with the BBC recently. So now you've got one of your little guys infiltrated into the system. And now he's got a little unit below him. So these guys here, he can actually force into compliance with his kind of editorial line. So he can actually just convert them to be black, okay? Or if they will not comply with his editorial line, he can actually then start making appeals. Oh, look, I need to get in my own stuff. I need to get rid of these guys. Get in my own stuff. And slowly but surely, you can have... Okay? People talk about Robert Conquest, but they never talk about how all of this actually might work in practice. You know, I might have a situation where half of the organization has been turned against its original purpose. The SJWs used to do this. The woke, they used to do this back in the day as well. But the masters of doing it, of course, are Zionists, okay? Another way of doing it, of course, much more efficient way, is either to attack this line of money here. One way of doing it is just by putting massive reputational attacks on this guy here. Hound him. Put him under lawfare. Put him under legal action. Attack him. Attack him. Attack him. Okay? And that, in that way, you could get a situation where he simply cuts off the money and the whole thing falls apart. Problem. Rival castle destroyed. Another way of doing it is simply by somehow buying him out. Getting rid of him and replacing him with one of your own. In which case, the whole organization goes from becomes, you know, you can color all in all of the circles. Other ways of doing it, of course, you can target this person, get him to turn black, as it were, in which case you get the whole thing. So there's just many, many different ways of doing it. And one of the reasons I'm loath to get involved in any organizations is because as soon as one is up and running, as soon as you get one going, it automatically becomes a target for this sort of action. And since these people have practically unlimited funds, unlimited resources, relentless kind of will, that sort of thing is going to happen no matter who you are, right? Unless you're in a situation where you'd have to be able to set it up where this person, this funder, keeps himself extremely well hidden and, you know, uses all kinds of shenanigans to cover up how you're doing that. That would be one way of doing it. But typically, if it's something that comes under the eye of Sauron, they're not going to stop until they either eliminate this little rival organization or turn all the nodes of it black. Okay, so these are things. So what I think is that people go into these situations not thinking about when you have an enemy who is relentless, who will stop at nothing, you may think it's far-fetched to turn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people from, you know, being like, forcing them to be compliant or simply replacing every last one. But if you actually look at the history of think tanks, of institutions, of organizations, coups like this, takeovers, hostile bids, internal subversion, infiltrations have happened time and time and time and time again until every last one of them is either converted or destroyed. And I feel like a lot of people, they talk about these things in theory, but when they actually get there, they then end up being surprised that these sorts of things actually go on. It's not just theory. This is drawn from observations. I've done all these books I've got here are stories that people have told about what actually happens when actual politics, actual power is at stake. So it's it's an uphill struggle if you're going to go the route of I'm going to join this organization and that organization. Okay. I don't want to name any particular institutions at all, but unless there is absolute vigilance, as per Robert Conquest, something like this will happen. Okay, and the thing Robert Conquest said, you have to watch out for the leftist all the time. I would say that in if it's right wing politics, you have to watch out for the Zionist all the time. You have to vigilantly keep that organization from becoming that. Because once it's that, its sole purpose will be about that. No political formula can brook an end. Same when it comes to left-wing politics, let's pretend those black circles are, I don't know, protecting the Democrat Party or, you know, being compliant on foreign policy and NATO sort of issues. Okay, they will stop at nothing until every last node is black and all of the true believers, all of the people who set it up, all of the people whose blood, sweat and tears built the thing will just be replaced over time. Iron law of oligarchy, absolutely ruthless if it has you in its sights. The prospect of actually achieving anything within the system, it strikes me, are low. Unless you have people who are actually prepared to have the heroic will to stand up to entrenched special interests. Entrenched special interests. That's what it will take. That's what FDR did in America. He took on entrenched special interests. That is what some of the great men of the 20th century, love them or hate them, did. They took on entrenched special interests and they were prepared to use the tools of power to do it. Probably the most visible example in the world today is Vladimir Putin in Russia, who actually took on the oligarchs. But, you know, I don't see a figure like this on the horizon in Britain or in America. Even if we have a look at the discourse. Now, recently I've made a lot of videos about Fuentes and Tucker and so on. I still, even in those figures, don't see that kind of will to do what would ultimately be necessary. I see them pushing for a slight readjustment and maybe a realignment of institutions away from the Zionists. But ultimately, you know, I don't see them truly, when push comes to shove, taking on the oligarchs, which is what it will take at this point. So is it actually impossible to change things? The thing is, it's very hard. And we're up against the machine too strong, you could say. But it's never impossible. And stranger things have happened all through history. Big realignments happen in politics and have happened many times over. The idea that nothing ever happens, in some ways, is the greatest neoliberal weapon. They want you to be in a frame of passive apathy and to just accept, you know, without questioning what happens. And even if the path to victory seems obscure, you can just make it more and more difficult for them. Just be a pain. And then eventually, who knows, the conditions may come about that may produce those forces that will create actual structural change, which this country is desperately crying out for. And so is America. So is the entire West, which is decaying and atrophying under systems that clearly do not work for the people. They work for an elite few. Increasingly a smaller and smaller elite few. But they don't work for anyone else. And eventually, such conditions will bring about strong enough desire that somebody will have the will. But not if you become part of the containment yourself. So, in a way, it's good that people like Connor and Haz, even though one is from the left and one is from the right, are drawing attention to these things. And I will do my bit to draw attention to the machinations of the, you know, current rotting structures that we have and the special interests that, you know, attempt to do coups and grab power for themselves. Ultimately, you don't want it to be a special interest. You want the interest to be your own. We want systems that work for us, not that work for a select few. All right, I think that'll do. I'd be interested to see how people take this video. Check out all the others I've done recently. There's been quite a lot. Slightly slower pace this week, so you can catch up if you've missed some of them. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.